victory 7-6 as the Phillies come racing out of the dugout, dancing around between first and second as Nick Castellanos has won the ball game. 7-6 the final. The Phillies win it, and Mr. Walkoff delivers again.
There you go. Nick Castellanos with the walk-off. Scott Fransky with the walk-off call. Not the home run call today, the walk-off, which was just as momentous, more momentous and more impactful because it was an epic game. Epic game, NLDS. Phillies beat the Mets. If you want to get the reaction, go back. We posted a podcast late on Sunday night. The reaction of what it was like in the belly of the beast that was Citizens Bank Park for Matt Strom and Brandon Marsh gave some great, great takes and realities when it came to living life as a human when you're in the middle of Citizens Bank Park, in that environment, in that sort of game, all of it. It's what baseball's all about. So we have plenty of time to talk about the postseason. We have plenty of interviews we already have coming up. One of them is a general manager who's still in the postseason right now and talks about what it's like to build his team, how he built his team this year, and that is Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo. But that's going to be dropped a little bit later. Right now, we have an executive, a chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Craig Breslow, to represent how a team is built. It doesn't reach the goal, but where you go from here. The perspective of where do you go from here if you're the Boston Red Sox, if you're Craig Breslow. And they had the postseason press conference with Craig Breslow, with team president Sam Kennedy, with manager Alex Cora. But we wanted to sit down with Craig to get the what's what and his perspective and see if we can get a little bit more detailed plan for what's going to happen when this postseason's done and you hit the GM meetings in San Antonio and then you go from there. So I felt like there were some very, very, very telling comments from Craig Breslow. Always a good time to catch up. I've covered Craig since he was a player, obviously, and now obviously as an executive. Two totally different things. As he points out in the podcast, he was never the guy who had sat there in front of his locker and said, we should do this or we should do that. What's the front office doing? But there are guys like that. There's plenty always guys like that. It's the fun of baseball. We do it in the media. The players do it in the clubhouse. But now he has a brand new perspective of all that. We talk about that. Craig Breslow, the player, versus Craig Breslow, the executive. And most importantly, how the Red Sox are going to approach this offseason, because it is rubber meets the road time, fork in the road time, all of that. Alex Cora can talk about, hey, this is the last time we're going to struggle. Maybe they're in a position to actually not struggle. Maybe they're in a position to be aggressive because that's what they're hinting at right now. And it goes beyond hinting. Listen to the podcast and you tell me. All right. Producer Evan, awesome job. I asked him to do a ton of stuff for the weekend because we were posting a ton of stuff. We're going to continue to post a ton of stuff. Boots on the ground, Philadelphia, New York, baseball's in boring roadshow. Producer Evan, just getting the job done. I appreciate everybody. So go to @BBIsn'tBoring Instagram and on Twitter/X. So also thank you to everybody, Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage, Wasabi Technologies, for walking side by side with us throughout what is really, really an epic month already. So we appreciate it. It's been an epic year. All right, we're going to keep it rolling. Feel like you're going to like this one. Craig Breslow sitting down, chief baseball officer, Boston Red Sox, as he gets ready for what is going to be a very momentous offseason. Craig Breslow.
All right, there's no human being I'd rather talk to right now than Craig Breslow.
Is that true?
It is true.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely is true. Absolutely. So I always enjoy our conversations. By the way, I was going back when you were, you were with the Cubs. 2019, we're just talking about the great game of baseball. It's you said, you know, we were talking about baseball, and I wasn't really planning on this, but it seems like a good conversation.
Hey, where's this going?
No, don't worry. It's not the competitive advantages lie in messaging, delivering pack. It's something I wrote for a story that delivering, packaging, implementing. You have to find a novel way to use all of that. I guess what I'm saying is that, like, I think that's even back 2019, that's 5 years ago, but I think that remains true, and it is the constant chase to stay ahead of everybody else. Since you've been sitting in that seat with in that spacious Fenway Park office, has it been what you expected when it comes to finding ways to separate yourself? I know that's a broad question, but I think an interesting one, right? I try to ask interesting questions.
Yeah, so let's rewind, I guess, what is that, 5 years to 2019. And I think the point I was trying to make, or at least the point that
You did a
I'm
good
going to try to
job.
make
I like it.
today is that, you know, in this like arms race to collect more information, to have new technology, to find the next shiny toy, I think we've lost the like implementation and execution side of things. Meaning that collecting a bunch of information, having a bunch of data is only as useful as getting it to the end user in a way that's actionable. And so, you know, I don't think the incentives in baseball really have changed in, you know, 100 and some odd years, right? You want to hit the ball really far. You want to throw the ball really fast. You want to get guys to swing and miss at it. You want to field it when it gets hit to you. You want to throw it to first base before a runner steps on the bag. You know, we've been able to deconstruct some of the underlying things that go into that type of performance. But in reality, like, we're still like the teams who are successful year over year are still the ones who take all of that information and distill it into really simple messaging and deliver it in a way that resonates with a coach or a player. And so, you know, there's this cycle, I think, in the evolution of baseball where there's some new stat or some new technology that allows us to collect new information, and certain teams get ahead of others, you know, being first movers are early to the market, and they're able to leverage a competitive advantage. But now, with the way that, you know, front offices turn over and players turn over, within a year or two, that information has been leveled and everyone has access to kind of the same information. And so the advantage is in messaging that until the next technology comes out that allows us to collect something new. And so, you know, at this point, everybody's got Hawkeye and Kinetrax and, you know, TrackMan, and like everybody's kind of dealing from the same deck. The difference is who can create organizational alignment, who can directionally move, and who can deliver information to players in a way that makes sense to them, gets them bought in, and facilitates them executing on it.
So, along those lines, like, and well said, by the way, excellent job. That's
Thank you.
more than you elaborated on a text. Along those lines is that, you know, so you come in, you know what you sort of want in this job. It hasn't been quite a year, but almost a year. You know what you want. You think you know what you want. You're trying to stay ahead of the curve. You're trying to evaluate all this stuff. And you're trying to get the messaging right. That's part of it too. What is the thing though? Like, if you look back now, what is the thing that has been the most challenging when it has come to this job, which you didn't see coming?
Yeah, maybe just the pace at which things move. So, you know, in my most recent former role as an assistant GM in Chicago, but primarily overseeing the pitching department and touching some other things, there was always a bit of a lag between the work that we were doing and the feedback or the impact that it would make on the field. Here, you know, we're making a decision in the afternoon about a roster transaction, the game that might be played that night. You know, we're trying to leverage the information that comes from a game, whether that's matchup projection or pitch data, pitch shape, you know, to determine something that we want to do tomorrow. And all the while, you know, while the major league team rightfully has the focus and the majority of our attention, or, you know, I'm also trying to keep one eye on scouting and one eye on the international markets and one eye on player development. And, you know, and so I think it's just this idea of The sporting landscape moves really, really fast, and you can find yourself caught up in this game of whack-a-mole if you move from bigger picture, longer term strategic thinking, strategic planning into crisis response, and that can happen really quickly.
That's hard. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You don't want to be like in constant like you said, crisis response. You like to be ahead of the curve, and then next thing you know, the season's over and you've been putting out fires, and how much have you advanced? And you have advanced, but I'm just saying that's the fear I would imagine of that you're running in place, but you haven't been running in place. You've been doing stuff. So Buster Posey is the latest player turn executive. What would Craig Breslow, the player, besides what you just said, Craig Breslow, the player, be surprised about being in the front office? Like, in so Craig Breslow, the player, from what I remember, wasn't like David Ortiz, who wanted them to sign Nelson Cruz for 5 straight years, right? I didn't get the sense that you were like, this is what we got to do. But still, like, you probably viewed the person in your position. In that case, it was like, say, Ben Sherrington. Like, what would you not understand as Craig Breslow, the player, that you would like to tell him now?
Yeah, I think that I understated in certain ways the job, overstated in others. I think that there are far more layers of complexity to every decision, to every transaction, than I would have appreciated as a player. I think as players, everything is pretty simple, pretty black and white. We're used to getting immediate feedback about our performance. That just doesn't exist in this role, right? Decisions that we make, whether those are draft picks or trades or hiring an analyst or a sports scientist, like, that may not pay dividends for 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And as a player, it was like, well, the problem that we're facing tonight is needing to get out a left-handed hitter, so we should bring in a left-handed reliever. And it's not going to be a surprise whether or not that worked, right? 35,000 people in the stadium and however many 100,000 viewers are going to all know at the same time as I do whether or not that job was done well. There's just that distance from decision-making outcomes, the time scale on which things need to operate, it's very different.
There's a lot. And so along those lines, were you pretty happy with, like, you go into the job, you had seen people make trades, you've seen Jed Hoyer make trades with the Cubs, you were part of that, but you weren't the ultimate decision maker like you are now. Were you pretty happy with the process you had, especially, like, let's say the trade deadline, the process that you had? There's so many elements. I just talked to JJ Piccolo just now and about his deadline. And, they had a very, very, like, all over the place effective deadline, Lucas Ursic, but they also get a guy like Tommy Pham and everything else. So I guess my question is, were you happy with the process that you went through? Did you learn anything from that process? And would you do anything different?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is it is really easy to make striking recommendations from the number two or the number three seat. For me to walk into Jed's office and, make a trade proposal and tell him that I am, adamant and convicted that we need to do it. Our deadline, obviously, from a results standpoint, didn't end up the way that we had hoped. We had untimely injuries. The performance wasn't, what we had expected. That's part of the gig here. I think from the perspective of process, I think we did do a good job, though. We identified very clear needs. We entered the trade deadline with a punch list and we executed on that. I think we got two relievers that had come with track records of success. We got a starter, a left-handed starter at that. We got a right-handed bat that we felt like could both strengthen the catching core and also, would play well at Fenway, given Danny's profile for pulling the ball in the air. And then lastly, we operated from a position of depth, in trading Nick, a primarily a second baseman, and that's in a position within this organization that we really feel good about for kind of a similar, you know, prospect pedigreed, but starting pitcher in Quinn. And, you know, I think from the standpoint of walking out of the room, you know, as the clock struck six on deadline day, we felt pretty good about what we were able to accomplish. Now we're dealing with, you know, in two relievers, the most volatile of positions over a stretch of about 2 months. And sometimes this is the way that it goes. But I also recognize that, you know, our performance, my performance at the trade deadline is going to be measured by, you know, what happens over the 2 months that we have these players. And that didn't go as well as we would have hoped.
When you look at when you look at going forward, the ability or the aggressiveness that you want. And then last time when we did a podcast in the off season, you used the word, this isn't necessarily predictive of how it's going to be. And that's fair. Every off season's different. Every goal's different. I asked you at the press conference about that dynamic of executives know that you can make bigger moves when you have more controllable assets, when you evolve as an organization. As you head into this, understanding you're going to look under every rock and you're going to try to do everything, but do you have the feel, because of the way that you guys are set up, that you can make aggressive moves, whether that's spending, whether that's trading, obviously more aggressive than even last year, but do you just feel in your bones that like this is going to be a more aggressive offseason?
You know, I think we are preparing for that to be the case. It's obviously difficult to say, you know, this will be more aggressive in terms of what actually comes to fruition, because we can't always decide those things, but we are preparing to be more decisive, more aggressive, you know, to field a team that is capable of winning the division, of making a deep playoff run. You know, I think we did spend several years, you know, obviously predating me, building a really strong foundation. And the reason you do that is so that you can deliver on the field. And I do think we are arriving at that point. That's been, you know, that was the tone that Sam struck. That is, you know, the messaging that I'm getting throughout the organization is that, you know, it's time to deliver to our fans the teams that they have come to expect, the competitive level that they've come to expect of the Boston Red Sox.
And it's not just as simple as just, hey, have players who, you know, you wear their jerseys around. You have, you know, you want star players. But the biggest thing to me, and I come back to this, is there's no certainty. I mean, this is where you look at these teams in the postseason, and there is an element of they're built around this. And whether that's clubhouse, whether that's production, whatever it is, and you do have so many good young players coming up, but do you also see maybe a need for lack of a better term, the certainty, the high price certainty, whether it comes in a trade, whether it comes in a free agent signing, but that guy, as you said before, the Red Sox have always sort of seen, when you have David Ortiz, you have that for years, right? I get it. And you have Devers, but still, you know, Devers is a young guy and whatever. Do you feel like that there is that need for maybe a little bit more star power slash certainty on this team?
Well, I think, you know, stars have been a significant part of the story of the Boston Red Sox for a really long time. I don't see any reason for that to change. Now, I think the question is, where do stars come from? And you know, certainly they are available via free agency to some degree via trade. But also, I think we have a number of players who are going to be stars in the organization right now. We have to figure out how to balance all of that out and put the pieces together. Because really the question is, you know, for how long does someone have to perform before you can call them, before you can label them with certainty, right? You know,
yeah, I apologize for using certainty because I know I get it.
As it says
in Zero Dark 30, I know that certainty freaks you guys out. Like, so,
Well, no, I mean, I think it's like you can look at, let's say, Jaron Duran, right? And, you know, put up like nearly an 8-win season by Baseball Reference, right? So if we get 50% of that performance next year and he's a 4-win player, that's still a star. So I don't know that it's certainty kind of so much as our, how do we continue to raise the floor without sacrificing the upside there? Because I think there's a world where Jaron goes out and he's an even better player next year. You know, but take Abreu as an example, had a very, very good rookie season. Are we certain he's going to perform at that level next year? Like, no, but I think we've seen enough to know that this is a good big league player. Like, this guy can contribute on a playoff caliber team. Now, there are real things that we need to address in terms of the lineup being predominantly left-handed. We need to add depth to the pitching staff. We need to rebuild the bullpen. But my job is to figure out how the pieces come together to create a team that's capable of winning the division. And some of that will likely be, feeling really good about a narrow distribution of outcomes. We know what we're going to get out of this guy, most likely. Mm-hmm. And others will be, hey, there's one outcome where this guy is not what we thought he could be, but there's also one where he outperforms what we're expecting by, twofold, threefold. Right. And I think you want to leave room for all of those things, because most teams that make deep playoff runs do have players who outperform what you think they were going to be. But they've also built in enough of a floor that, they can weather the regression that often comes along with that.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. It's where there's no doubt, like you mentioned, Abreu, Duran, there's no doubt these guys are good players. It's sort of the why you're letting these guys evolve and come into that to your point that you want them to get to, mm-hmm. like to have these guys. And maybe that's not necessarily a star player, but maybe that's just even in the clubhouse, Greg, like even like the dynamic of leadership. And again, when you were playing, it was the benefit of having a bunch of those guys, Ortiz being the preeminent example. But mm-hmm. But I don't know if you feel like there is maybe that need for a veteran guy, whether it's in the bullpen, whether it's a position player, whether it's at the top of the rotation, where you say, hey, listen, I know what I am. You guys are figuring out what you are, but I know what I am. And my bad day is going to be followed up by five good days. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that there is, there's at least two, probably more benefits to that, right? There's what you get on the field, and then there's the impact that can have on some of those younger guys who are more formative and, are still trying to figure out their identities. We obviously benefited from veterans in the bullpen, didn't have kind of that veteran presence in the rotation in terms of, the guy that we brought in via free agency, but certainly, someone like Nick, kind of filled that role for us. We'll get Lucas back next year. And that kind of was what was supposed to be that signing this past offseason. And, by all accounts, he should be healthy and contributing, at a really high level for us. But I think it does take a lot of the pressure off of the young guys and allows them to develop at their own pace, as opposed to putting so much pressure on the group that they can't possibly live up to those expectations.
Just the last thing is when we do this all the time, the teams are in the postseason, we try to learn. I mean, everyone freaks out when the graphic is put up about Detroit having a smaller payroll than Josh Hader. So like, oh my goodness, the Red Sox are going to see that and they're going to follow that. Right.
Yeah.
But what, go ahead.
I would just say what we do is we wait for the team to win the World Series and then we reverse engineer what it takes to win the World Series. Right. So if,
there's been teams in sports that have done it, believe me. Mm-hmm. And there's also been, we just did this podcast the other day about this dynamic of, oh, he did well for 3 weeks in the postseason. Let's give him like twice as much money. It happens. It happens all the time.
Of course it does, right? Because when you perform in the postseason, you are a guy who can perform on the biggest stage. And
understandable. This is the last thing. So when you look at sort of the success of teams this year, mm-hmm. what is the thing that jumps out for you?
Yeah. So, as you think about maybe Detroit, and creativity, and obviously all of the teams here deserve a ton of credit. But, I think there are teams who are thinking about solving problems in novel ways. Some of that was forced upon teams as a result of injuries or performance. But, it certainly sparked the interest in me to think about, how do we solve a pitching problem in a way that other teams aren't thinking about. I think there are teams in the postseason that had really good off seasons and, turned around the trajectory of the organization in a really short amount of time by making some really shrewd signings. And we should be doubling down on identifying the right free agent targets and being aggressive in bringing in those players who are able to boost the outlook of the team. I think one thing we can all appreciate is, given the current playoff format, getting in. That's what you have to do, right? You have to get in. Now, I think the standard that we want to hold ourselves accountable to is competing for the division. But when you're competing for the division and you fall just short, you still get in. And that means you still have a chance. And we're seeing, right now that you get hot at the right time and you position yourself for a deep postseason run.
Will you spend $100 on your Halloween costume? This is a question I've been asking everybody.
Will I? I hope that's all it takes.
Oh, wow. Aggressive Halloween costume. All right. Well, take some time to actually enjoy your family and all the festivities. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.